From KCRW, this is DNA, Design and Architecture. I'm Frances Anderton. COVID-19 is a crisis, but with crisis can come opportunity.
While it's unquestionably a disaster, it's also something that is kind of forcing some innovation. And that's certainly the case, I think, in architecture and in urban design.
Sam Lubell is an architecture critic, and he was co-creator of Never Built Los Angeles and Never Built New York. These were a pair of exhibitions and books about unrealized, ambitious projects for those cities. And that means that Sam is an expert in missed opportunities. So we're going to talk about opportunities we should grasp at, opportunities that have been revealed as we have adapted so fast to new ways of working, living, and confronting a health crisis. We're going to touch on less wasteful construction, on healthier homes, and more flexible workplaces, on reducing the need for megacities, and hopefully for sustaining cleaner air. This is one of several conversations we're going to be having on DNA about our future world post-pandemic. I reach Sam online, of course, somewhere in the Catskills.
I don't see it necessarily starting completely new currents in those fields. What I see it doing is sort of pushing forward some currents that were already emerging and already existed.
And what are those currents?
One good example is modular and prefabricated construction. I mean, we've been looking at modular and prefab, you know, for over half a century, and it's sort of been kind of waxed and waned as a legitimate tool, and it's something we do use, but it's something that a lot of people in the construction and architecture fields think is not employed enough. It's seen as something that's, in a lot of cases, it's more economical, it's faster, less wasteful. And when I say modular construction, a lot of that means is creating standardized components like in a factory or offsite, then bringing them to the site and kind of assembling them quickly.
And what does that have to do with COVID-19?
So yeah, I mean, it's been all over the place. It's been used very effectively and very quickly to create something that we need, you know, the most urgently right now, which is new hospitals and new storage facilities, includes emergency living facilities. So one example that's been talked a lot about is in Wuhan, where the pandemic originated, Chinese builders were able to put together two hospitals. One is 1,000 beds, one's more than like 1,500 beds, but two hospitals in about 2 weeks. FEMA has something called the National Mobile Disaster Hospital. It's something they actually developed after Katrina. They realized that this is something they may need to do in the future. But these systems are all over the place. There's some excellent architects who are proposing advanced versions of these. One is an Italian architect, Carlo Rotti, who's building what he calls CURA, C-U-R-A, which is connected units for respiratory ailments. This is another modular facility that's even more advanced that can be put together incredibly quickly, connected by inflatable corridors, so you build a whole new hospital in about a day. And there's a company in the U.S. called Jupe that's building modular hospitals as well. They can just be flat-packed and deployed to any hospital and set up in a parking lot. They have researchers that are part of automotive and aerospace technology that are using things like Tesla batteries and car building techniques to put these up really quickly. So these are just a few of the examples of some of the modular techniques that are, opening a lot of people's eyes in architecture to, oh, wow, you know, this is something that we can use now and we can use to build a lot faster. It can be more economical, less waste, because you're not, as a lot of people in construction know, when you're building on site, a lot of things don't wind up in the building, and they just wind up in trash yards. And it's not always perfect. And, you know, we want things to still be customized to their sites, and that's something that can't be lost. But this is definitely a tool that I think is going to be seeing more use in the future.
So modular and prefab, one building system that might be galvanized by this pandemic. Are there any others?
Another one is adaptive reuse. Adaptive reuse is essentially recycling an existing building for a new purpose, but it's still not a mainstream thing in a lot of places. But in COVID, it's become an incredibly useful tool. and it's being used for all over the country, all over the world right now. So the Javits Center in New York has become a 2,900 bed hospital. There's New Orleans Convention Center, which has also become a hospital, Chicago's McCormick Place. And then you have more unconventional buildings being turned into medical facilities, high rises. There's one on Wall Street. Vanderbilt's turning a parking lot into a medical facility. But it begs the question of whether all buildings should be, in the future, built with the idea that they could eventually be converted into either an emergency use or another use as, you know, as times change, which they are changing a lot quickly, more quickly than they ever have.
And that could take us straight to another kind of building that has actually seen a change of use during this shelter in place, which is the home. And some people have found that their home doesn't necessarily work for them as a workspace. They've perhaps found that an open plan environment doesn't work when the whole family's trying to make phone calls and do their work. So what about home interiors?
Oh, absolutely. We're all intimately acquainted with the flaws of our homes now that we've been in them for over a month. And I think one of those is the modular strategy that I was talking about before. I think homes will be probably built in ways that we can adapt to different times. You know, if we need to build walls to create an office in our home, you know, out of a living room into different spaces so people don't go crazy in them, that's one thing. But another thing is there was a sort of a non-mainstream movement called the healthy building movement. And I think in a lot of ways before this, that was seen as a way sort of for well-being. So it's like more natural light, better ventilation, you know, fewer toxic materials, using plants and other natural materials. And that's expanding now. I think we're all seeing we don't want to feel like we're in prison. So there's elements that connect you to the outside world are going to become more popular. Skylights, bigger windows, maybe balconies, courtyards, anything that's sort of semi-private and kind of connects us to the outside world will become more valuable. But that goes beyond just the well-being that I was talking about. That also goes to health. You know, how can our homes and other buildings, you know, help stop the spread of diseases and pathogens, not just COVID, but other health problems. So One thing that we're learning is we're looking at hospitals now and how effective their ventilation systems are at kind of containing pathogens. They have things like technologies like negative air pressure, which basically keeps pathogens in one area and they don't spread to the other parts of the hospital. That's an important thing. There's displacement ventilation. You kind of have cool air come in at the bottom, and then as it lifts, it actually lifts the contaminants out. There's clean air ventilation, which I think is going to be a big deal in homes now, filtering in fresh air rather than recirculating air, because that's obviously not very healthy when it comes to pathogens. And they, you know, especially in homes, but also in big apartment buildings where everybody, this recycled air is going from one apartment to the next. I can't see buildings using that much anymore after this. And these were all things that were sort of on the periphery that I think are going to become mainstream. And where I see them becoming not just, you know, mainstream, but musts is in places where people don't have a choice but about social distancing. That's places like prisons, places like homeless shelters, refugee facilities. People there don't have a choice. They can't social distance the way we can. And also just surfaces. There's antimicrobial surfaces, they're polymer surfaces that are good for, you know, when you touch it, it's not going to spread to somebody else when they touch it. And amazingly, I didn't even know this before, but copper is incredible at killing germs and viruses. So you have copper, but even its alloys like brass, you're going to see a lot more of those surfaces after this. You're also going to see all these things happen, not just in the home, not just in these kind of must-have spaces, but in offices they're going to have them, factories, warehouses, schools, stadiums. So there's a lot of ramifications for how that could change our architecture.
There's also ramifications for where we actually put these houses, as in 100 years ago, a place like Los Angeles was extremely attractive to people who, say, had tuberculosis, left the East Coast, left dense cities that were seen as germ-ridden and polluted, and they came to sprawling, spread-out Los Angeles, where they could have a house and a yard and open space and air and really a kind of a healthy living. over the last century, we have changed our views on the sustainability of that form of urban development. And for the past probably three decades in Los Angeles, we have been pushing for a densification that brings us to a kind of lifestyle that is closer to that of New York. COVID-19 has kind of exploded that set of assumptions, as we've seen how New York has suffered through the very close proximity of people to each other, while Los Angeles has been relatively less badly impacted, and people are saying it's in part because LA is more spread out. So all of a sudden, are we going to find that people, especially those who were already skeptical of LA's efforts to get more dense, are going to make the argument that spread out development, the so-called sort of suburban pattern of development, isn't such a bad thing after all?
It's a really good question. I think it's like a million-dollar question right now. I don't think it's as it's going to be as binary as we should just move to back to sprawl, because I think that's not the solution. And you know, we'll go back to the unsustainable way we were living before. That's not feasible. I think it's got to be a lot more nuanced than that. New York, yes, it's denser and it has a lot more people walking around. But I don't think that's necessarily going to change. I think we're going to be smarter about it. I think we're going to be using, in open spaces, we're going to be using new technologies to kind of track and contain the virus, like early warning systems, you know, assessing threats, helping us maintain social distance. And when it comes to the way cities develop, I think one thing that I think is going to change is our kind of, I think, over-reliance on kind of mega cities as what we kind of give the most attention to. I think that's happened to the fault of smaller cities and of rural areas, which have been suffering because mega cities have been sort of sucking up all the resources and all the talent and places that, like in the Rust Belt, for instance, which once had economies based on industry, haven't been able to come back as much because they aren't seen as important. I think the way that we have become more used to being remote and able to do that is going to have profound effects on that. But it's not just telecommuting. It's, you know, working from home, but you've got telemedicine, you've got distance learning, you've got online shopping, you've now got online entertainment that's not just watching Netflix, but also you're streaming, you know, plays and events from larger cities. You're virtually exploring museums. I think you could have more what are called digital nomads moving out further out. And then if they move farther out and they can do telecommuting, you're not going to have the issue of sprawl and mega commutes. You're going to have people that are, for the most part, staying further away. But as I said, I don't think it's going to be one or the other. I think it's going to be that you just have more options, which I think is healthy.
Sure. And to the extent there's an upside of this whole COVID crisis, the cleaning up of the air has been a beautiful thing to behold. And we're also learning that, you know, pollution or living in polluted environments is itself an underlying condition for COVID. So how possible might it be to encourage municipalities, encourage governments to say, let's hold on to this piece of this experience. Let's figure out a way to hold on to the cleaner air. And if that involves enshrining these commuting patterns that have unfurled in these last few weeks, could we harness this sort of one piece of this experience into a real change for the urban condition?
What I think is likely to happen is the way most things are happening in our country. This is going to unfold almost like we're two countries. So in places, I think, in like California, New York, more liberal states, or at least the cities and probably the states, we're going to see people latching on to the one side of the aftermath of this, which is, you know, look at the clean air we're having, look at what we need to do. And I think those states are going to take those steps to keep that in place. And then I think other places, other states are going to say, you know, we need to get back to work. Look at how much economic damage this did. and we're going to need to just, you know, ramp things up and almost move in another direction. I'm worried politically too what this could be. I think, you know, a lot of people think this is a reset, but other people think it's a way, you know, to shut down our border. So it's like everything is, you know, seen through the lens of politics, and right now we're a very divided country.
Right. We could end there, but I think I can't let you go without bringing up the topic of transportation. As you know, Los Angeles is in the midst of a huge transit construction program right now. Its emphasis is on mass transit, as in trains, an improvement of the bus networks. And here comes COVID, which suddenly has people scared of sitting too close to each other. Already, several of our mass transit lines were seeing a drop in numbers rather than an increase, as people were choosing to use rideshare rather than get on a crowded bus or train. So I see a kind of speeding up of the effort to get autonomous vehicles on the road. Where, what cleaner environment could you be in than a little, you know, sanitized self-driving bubble? So what do we do about that? We've decided mass transit is a public good. How do we convince people that it still is?
Yeah, that's a really good question too. And I think it goes back to taking the long view and not overreacting as a result of a crisis like this. We can't just have a pendulum swing and say, okay, now we're going back to cars. And that includes automated cars. Automated cars are still cars, you know, and there's still going to be traffic with them. And there's still going to be issues of sprawl, and it's not going to, you know, it's not the panacea that everybody or a lot of people seem to think it is. It's just, and mass transit is still more efficient and more effective as far as environmental costs, but also social costs. And we can't just abandon it right now. And I think people need to realize that for anything right now. We can't just use this as a way to kind of jump ship on things that are in the long term going to be better for us.
Well, Sam Lubell, very well put. Always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. It's always a pleasure to talk to you as well.
You've been listening to Sam Lubell. He's an architecture critic and co-creator with Greg Golden of Never Built Los Angeles and Never Built New York. I'm Frances Anderton. Thank you for listening to the DNA podcast. Stay tuned and stay well.